welcome once again. And in the studio today with me is Tyler Butler, who is naturalist at Teradice. What do you call Teradice?
Teradice Nature Center.
Nature Center, okay. Mm-hmm. And Tyler has been on here before, and we're going to talk about nature today and things going on, or in this case, not going on at Teradice. And Tyler, you want to start just giving us a little bit of background as far as what Teradice is and a little bit about the founding of Teradice and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here, Mike. Last time I was here, I was with Emily of the Eco Center over in Caledonia as well. We were talking about a little bit of the fall programming that was going on there. It's a pleasure to be here talking Teradice today. Teradice is a cozy little property just south of Caledonia, and it runs right along the Olentangy River, north of 95, south of 309. We're kind of smack in the middle there.
What's the name of that road right there? Is that Whetstone River Road?
Whetstone River Road, okay. North. That's okay. The important part. Yep, north and south. So we are, like I said, located right along the Olentangy River there. We've got lots of diversity as far as habitat and wildlife goes. There's lots going on at Teradice, even though there's not a whole lot going on at Teradice, as you mentioned before. just in context with everything that's going on right now. So Teradice was really founded in 1952 with Ray and Trella Romine. Ray was a poet, an illustrator. He was also a mail carrier in the area and an amateur lepidopterist, which means he collected moths and butterflies.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you explained that. I wasn't quite sure what that
was. Yeah, it sounds scary. Anytime you have any sort of ist and amateur, there's room for concern there. But no, an amateur lepidopterist and a really great one at that. He's got all sorts of specimens, some that he donated to, I believe, the Ohio... I'll have to remember. I'll keep thinking on where he's donated a lot of his specimens. But we also have a lot of them there on property as well. Trella was a local historian. She was a naturalist. Also a business owner. She owned Hemmerly's Flowers, which is still rolling today. And also the mother of David and Kathy Holdeman. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Ray and Trella, they purchased that property in 1952. It was about 18 acres, about 4 acres north of the Olentangy as it flowed through the property, and another 13 or so on the south side of the Olentangy there. They lived there as a couple with David and Kathy for about a year. The house was finished in 1953 that they built on the property itself. That house kind of fulfilled one of Trella's big dreams of, and this is her quote, living in a house on a hill on a river in the woods, which is really nice. In 1954, unfortunately, Ray passed away, so he only got to live on the property in that house that they built together for a year. But while he was at Teradice and the time that he spent there, he actually wrote a poem every single day, and we have a large collection of his poems. He kept sending them into magazines and different publications to try to get those poems published, and quite a few of them were. So really, really great on Ray there. In 1990, skipping forward a couple of years there, mm-hmm. in 1990, the property itself actually received the honor of a natural education landmark from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Mm-hmm. And then also around that time, Trella was doing a lot of work with the Marion County Parks District and ended up donating all of the land, the 18 acres south of the river, to the Marion County Parks District. And that's now known as the Teradice Nature Preserve. She held on to the property where her house was located, that 4 acres north of the river, and stayed there until, or held on to that property until 2013, when unfortunately Trella passed away at 97, and the property was left to her son, David Holdeman, which then in 2018 turned it over to a nonprofit, Nature Center, and then I came on just last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Trella was a very knowledgeable person. I met her several times and loved talking about her, or talking to her,
yes.
Not about her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just as a side note, David Holdeman, her son, was one of my elementary school music teachers way back when. So, yes.
Yeah.
I have
yes.
some connections there.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Trella was very, very accomplished. Her list of accomplishments that we've kind of compiled is just, it's pages and pages mm-hmm. and pages. She was also, a really accomplished writer as well, and had, regular publications coming through. The Day Before Yesterday was one of her most popular. She would send those into newspapers. So,
okay, that's a little bit about Terradyce itself. What do we see in the realms of nature out there right this time of year? What's going on?
Yeah.
not much of anything? Or
It's it's definitely an odd time, and I know it's tough maybe for us to see all of the changes happening this time of year in nature, because especially with the context of what's going on this year in 2020, it's tough for us to see all of the things happening outdoors right now. But there is a lot of movement happening. I mean, we are in a really prime time for birds moving through the area from their feeding grounds in the south up to their breeding grounds in the north. Some of the birds are going to stop and be, residential for the summer. They might breed here. And then other birds are just using Ohio kind of as a pit stop in order to go a little further north, which is really, really nice. One of the birds I'm thinking of right now is a tiny little duck. It's the smallest duck in North America. It's called a bufflehead duck. Black and white duck. Really, really nice. I'm just thinking about their shape. It's almost comical how small they are. And that duck kind of stops in Ohio for a couple weeks in the spring, couple weeks mm-hmm. in the fall, but it's really heading to the boreal forests of Canada to do the breeding. And then it'll spend the winters down in their feeding grounds kind of in the Florida area, which
is
really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think one of the most popular migrations coming through Ohio in the next couple weeks is going to be our warbler migration. Warblers are really tough to see because that's not really a bird that will come visit your feeders. They're more boreal treetop species.
They stick
in the canopies, really, really tiny, tiny birds. So they're not going to come down to eye level. They're not going to come down to really an area where we can see them. So you really need to get the knocks out, the binoculars, to catch a glimpse of them. But they are just extremely colorful birds. Their plumage is just, it'll blow your mind. We've got about 40 species of just warbler that come through Ohio in kind of the tail end of April there, beginning middle of May. About 25 of those species will stop and reside here in Ohio for the summer and then head south for the winter again. But there's about 10, 15 of those warblers that keep on moving. They keep on heading north.
Just warble north, huh?
They just warble north. No, they are a fantastic bird. There are a lot of groups that when the warbler species are moving through, they'll hold things like birdathons, or they'll have a contest, put a group together to see, just how many bird species, not just warbler species, but how many bird species altogether. You can go out and count in like a 24-hour period. I took part in one of these last year on Cape Cod, actually. which was a fantastic experience. And it was like right smack dab in the middle of this warbler migration. I mean, we went to a place called the Beach Forest, pretty close to Provincetown on Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw, I think, 15 species of warbler just standing in one spot in this beach forest. And it was just one out of the other, you know, one after the other, just, oh, look over here and look over there, you know. And it, by the time you saw one, somebody was pointing at another species and we were trying to keep track of them all, which is really amazing. And at the end of that 24-hour period of the birdathon we were doing over there, we actually ended up with about 148 species of bird.
Wow.
Yeah, in 24 hours. It was pretty incredible.
Now, isn't there on Facebook now, and I think you're participating in it, a bird watching page on Facebook, and specifically in Marion?
Yeah, there are. I can't remember the arrangement of Marion Bird Watchers or Bird Watchers
That's what
Marion.
It is, yes.
Yeah, I think it's Marion Bird mm-hmm. Watchers. Yeah, there's a lot of really accomplished, really skilled bird watchers in Marion County. And they are taking great photos. They encourage you to share those photos onto that Facebook page. And even if you're not sure what you're finding, I'm sure if you post it on that Facebook page, somebody could help you with
you
an
or
idea
James
as well.
Anderson. There are
yeah,
plenty
James
of experts.
James is doing a lot of great
there.
Work out there too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Other birds we're seeing this time of year in our area are hummingbirds. Coming back yet, or is it a little early for them?
Sure, we're probably just a tad early for hummingbirds right now. They may be in kind of southern Ohio at the moment, but if you are interested in setting out feeders, this would be the time to do so, because within the next, I would say, week and a half, we're going to start really seeing the hummingbirds come back. Let's see, some other noteworthy birds that I'm sure you've been hearing lately, especially if you live by any sort of body of water, that's going to be the eastern phoebes. They've got a great call. It's kind of like they're saying their own name. They just, Phoebe, Phoebe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's fantastic. One of my favorite little flycatchers there. They're just a great bird, and they just call and call and call, and they're fantastic. You may be seeing some birds kind of brooding or sitting on eggs in mm-hmm. driveways or parking lots, especially gravel.
Killdeer,
you got it.
Yes.
Yeah, killdeer, they're another really fantastic bird. But yeah, they are, you know, their eggs are on the ground right now. This is their first brood or their first batch of eggs for the season. You know, and they're not really getting an easy April right now. The wind is really blowing them around. The temperatures are going to drop here, especially this week,
right.
Later on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really having a tough time. But, you know, most of that brood should make it. Killdeer are already pretty responsible mothers. So,
well, one thing about killdeer that really fascinates me, if you get near their nest, they'll act like the mother will act like they're crippled.
Yes.
And try to lead you away from the eggs or babies.
Yeah, yeah, which is a really interesting response to any predation or anything like mm-hmm. that, is to steer that predator away from the nest, you know, get the danger away from the nest and come back later. And really successful most of the time. Their eggs are also really incredible. They're very, very speckled.
Mm-hmm.
And they look just like, I mean, if you were just scanning, you know, a parking lot, gravel parking lot, you would not be able to pick them out unless you were pretty much standing right on top of them. They are tough eggs to see. Very camouflaged.
And by the way, folks, if you're wanting to find that place on Facebook, it's called Marion County Birders. So there you go.
Yeah. There are a lot of really great resources on Facebook or social media. You know, there's pages like Ohio Nature Enthusiasts or Ohio Flora, which is all about Ohio native plants. There are some fungus pages. There are some reptile enthusiast pages. Just lots of places to do just a ton of learning, a ton of interacting with people that might have, you know, similar interests or asking similar questions that you may have. There's just a lot of people willing to hand out information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you had mentioned reptiles. What kind of reptiles do we see around the Terradyce area?
Sure, yeah. So Terradyce has, like I said, a very diverse number of species. Actually, yesterday I was working on some of the rock beds that we have out mm-hmm. there at Terradyce. And it seemed like every stone that I would pick up, there was something underneath it, which was very exciting for me. I was very encouraged to keep picking things up and looking underneath them. And that's the way I was as a kid, too, just always, you know, looking underneath things. Yeah. You know, and I got pretty lucky. I found a brown snake, northern brown snake. Which is a very, very teeny tiny snake. Mm-hmm. You could miss it if it was on the trail in front of you pretty easy. They rarely get past, you know, 10 inches or so. And they're looking for really, really soft foods, you know, worms, slugs, things like that. Something that's not going to cause them too much of an issue. And then I found just your, you know, run-of-the-mill eastern garter snake. Not garden snake, garter snake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's important. That was a pretty large garter snake. I imagine it was probably around 20 inches or so, which gets up there with kind of their maximum length, mm-hmm. About 2 feet or so, maybe a little over 2 feet for a garter snake. They pretty much max out on the size there on the length. So that was a pretty exciting find. And both of those snakes I could handle pretty readily. I know people are a little bit uncomfortable when it comes to snakes.
Well, I am.
You know, and it's a lot easier said than done. And there's really nothing to worry about with snakes, especially in the area that we are. Ohio has about 25 species of snake native to our state. 14 of those species are actually threatened or endangered, which doesn't provide well for, you know, a lot of our native reptiles. Only 3 of those 25 species are venomous and can cause you any harm whatsoever. And we're not in the range of 2 of those. Those 3 venomous snakes are the Massasauga rattlesnake or the swamp rattler, some people call them. We're kind of inside the Massasauga range. It's a small black rattlesnake, really, really tough to come across. We really just don't see him too often. And that is a threatened species, actually. I know there's a lot of work going on right now to try and bring back the populations because really, you know, venomous snakes are great for rodent control, you know,
things
like that.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So they're really, really important when it comes to balancing ecosystems. The other 2 venomous snakes that we have the copperheads, mm-hmm. Which I imagine most are familiar with. And then we have timber rattlesnakes too, but nowhere around our area. They're more southern Ohio. So really rock face, you know, areas.
Is there a way that you can tell a venomous snake? Is there something that they have in common that you can look for?
Sure.
Now, with a rattler, obviously, you hear the
rattling. Rattlers are courteous enough to warn you before they bite you. So, mm-hmm. And really, you know, a snake, they are going to that's kind of their last resort is biting. You know,
right.
Venom is expensive to make. It takes a lot of energy to make venom. They're not going to waste it on something that they're not going to be able mm-hmm. to potentially consume, eat for more energy. So biting is, you know, last resort for a snake in most cases. But yeah, there is a way to tell snakes in Ohio. This doesn't work 100% of the time anywhere in the world you are. But in Ohio, yes. What you're going to want to look for is any of the non-venomous snakes that we have. They'll have very oval eyes, very round eyes with a round pupil. And their head kind of goes into, or their head kind of flows in really evenly with the rest of their body.
All right.
Whereas your venomous snakes, they have sort of like a cat's eye, which, you know, if you can just envision kind of the slit eye of a cat, the slit pupil,
mm-hmm.
That's what a venomous snake's eye will look like in Ohio, as well as behind their head. they're going to have kind of like swollen glands. Those are their venom glands back
there. So okay.
They have more of a spade shaped head rather than just, you know, a head that goes into the body.
Okay.
Yeah. Now there are some snakes that will try and trick you. You know, just like the killdeer has its defense mechanisms. I'm trying to think of a snake that, well, like a water snake, common water snake, mm-hmm. Which often gets misidentified as water moccasin.
Right.
No water moccasins in Ohio. But a lot of times what people are seeing are common water snakes or northern water snakes. And what they'll do is if you get a little bit too close, they'll kind of flatten their bodies out. And when they flatten their body out, they kind of get this spade shape to their head.
Okay.
Right? So I've been with groups and know what I have in my hands is a common water snake. Right.
Right.
And they are a little bit aggressive, but non-venomous. So, you know, if they bite you, it's not great, but it's not not potentially deadly either. You know?
Well, that's good.
And I've been showing and talking about, you know, this northern water snake or common water snake and keeping it away from them and trying to, manage the snake and it'll flatten out and then I'll second guess myself, like, do I know what this is? Is this really what I think it is? But, yeah, it was very exciting. But going back to the reptiles that I found yesterday, I was very, very excited. Lizards are not something that you commonly find in Ohio.
Right.
And yesterday I did manage to find a five-lined skink, a juvenile five-lined skink. So they're just a beautiful lizard. Very, very tiny. Actually, skinks are of the fastest reptiles in the world. You know, I was very, very lucky in that when I picked up the rock, it didn't take off.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, because I would have never, ever caught up to the skink. But it was pretty cold out, so they were pretty slow moving. Any reptile is pretty slow moving right now. They are cold-blooded, of course, and yesterday it was really cool outside. So they weren't willing to expend a lot of energy to get away. So, you know, both of those snakes... you know, I didn't want them to get injured, so I basically, you know, picked them up, moved them to another rock pile, which I wasn't working on in the moment, and they were pretty satisfied just to, you know, slither in and hold tight for the moment. But that skink, he was not happy to be handled, but needed to get him out of the way. He tried to bite a few times, but he's very, very tiny, very small, I would say skinks maybe around 4 to 6 inches or so.
Okay.
They're pretty tiny lizards, pretty feisty lizards.
No, something I don't know if they're called salamanders, but there's something. Okay, we have salamanders.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. Now something I've noticed about Marion is that salamanders are hard to come by, and you wouldn't really think that with the habitat or with the conditions that we have, kind of superficially on surface level. Because, you know, a lot of Marion is easy flooding, you know.
Oh, that's true, yes.
Yeah. And that's something that salamanders a lot of the time require. So they're amphibians. They're not lizards. You know, lizards are reptiles, so they have scaly skin. Whereas the amphibians, though they have a similar body structure, they're amphibians, salamanders.
Which amphibian, that means they can be on land or water.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Reptiles are usually strictly land?
Yeah, so reptiles are, for the most part, terrestrial.
Okay.
You'll find, though, turtles, right? Which,
right.
Are aquatic. So where they live as much as just kind of life cycle really... You know, where they live doesn't really make the difference. It's in the taxonomy and kind of the life cycle and the sort of, you know, some of these things go through metamorphosis, whereas like, you know, a reptile or something like, or an amphibian goes through metamorphosis. So if you look at something like a frog or even a salamander for the effect here, you know, a lot of those animals start out as kind of like a gelatinous egg, right?
Right.
It's not an egg that we would think of that comes from a bird or even a reptile, really. You know, there's no hard shell on it. The eggs are very, very squishy. They're, you know,
I've seen those, yes.
Yeah. And usually those eggs are laid in water.
Okay.
And so when we see a lot of salamanders moving back and forth, what they're trying to do is they're trying to go to their natal bodies of water, right? So somehow these salamanders that are moving back and forth, they remember where they hatched out, you know.
Oh, okay.
As a larva from the egg. And they're going back to these areas of wetland. And a lot of these areas of wetland are temporary pools or vernal ponds, which we do have a lot of here in mm-hmm. Marion County. And it's just a pool of water. And you may have one on your property mm-hmm. or know where to find one, right? It's just an area that gets really, really wet temporarily, right? Not permanently a pond or a lake or a stream. It just is an area that kind of gets wet for a few months in the spring or in the fall. And when we talk about amphibians, like a frog or like a salamander, you know, they are hatching from these eggs and they swim around as maybe like a tadpole.
Right.
And then that tadpole goes through a metamorphosis to become a frog. And that could take several months. It could take several years. Just when the conditions are right, they start to develop. Something like a reptile, they don't really go through a metamorphosis. You know, they just tend to grow, like a mammal will tend okay. to grow, or a mm-hmm. bird will tend to grow. Yeah. So the salamanders that we have in Marion County, I know that a lot of people are seeing red-backed salamanders right now. That's a pretty popular, common salamander to find. Again, about 3 or 4 inches max. It's just odd to have a county that can be kind of underwater as much as it is
mm-hmm.
And to not have salamanders around, because they depend on that water in order to survive, especially, you know, to eat. And when it rains, you can see, well, salamanders really like an area of object complexity, which basically just means they like an area where there's a lot of things to hide underneath.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, so a big empty field, not great for salamanders. If it's just, you know, a rock face, not great for salamanders. But if there's a lot of wooded debris, they especially like deciduous debris, which would mean like very broad-leafed, your oaks, your maples, your mm-hmm. beeches, things like that, as opposed to needle debris, which would be, you know, your spruce and your pines sure. and things mm-hmm. like that. So if you're looking for salamanders, you know, I encourage you to, well, one, be gentle with them because, you know, they do take in a lot of, well, they, through their skin, they do a lot of their breathing through their skin.
Okay.
We've got a lot of oil on our hands.
Right.
So if we handle, any sort of reptile like a frog or salamander or something like that, you know, we might be clogging up those pores
Ooh.
On their skin.
Okay.
Also, we need to keep in mind if we are kind of deeding ourselves before we go out and, you know, kind of adventure around in the woods, which I totally encourage. But if we're putting on that bug spray or that sunscreen, right, those chemicals that are left on our hands could potentially harm, you know, salamanders or frogs that we're picking up, or even reptiles, for that matter, that we're picking up. But just going back to finding salamanders in Marion County, there's not a lot of places you can find them. And if you're looking for them, you know, look for a place where there's a lot of deciduous broadleaf debris on the ground, a place where there's a lot of bark, rocks, logs, things like that, just kind of strewn out and about. Look underneath those logs. They're going to try to stay in a place that's being kept moist. Good rule of thumb is if you think there's going to be pill bugs or potato bugs under, you know, a certain log, then mm-hmm. you might also find salamanders under there
oh,
as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and they're not really prone to eating the pill bugs. They're a little bit tough for the salamanders. The salamanders are looking for slugs and worms and
soft food, yes.
Soft foods, yeah.
Well, what about mammals this time of year? Do you see a lot of squirrels around there? Do you have beaver in the river there? I mean, tell us about some of the mammals.
Yeah, so there's been word of beaver that's kind of floated through Terradyce, not really stopped and you know, taken down any trees or anything or built anything near Terradice. We would welcome it if it happened, but not lately. One of the mammals that we have seen that's very, very exciting is we've seen a few mink in the area.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, minks are these incredible predators. They're a wild weasel that we have here mm-hmm. in Ohio. And we have a couple different types of wild weasel that we have here in Ohio. But the mink is just incredible. Mink is one of those animals that really made Ohio early on. Mink and beaver, actually.
For their pelts?
For their pelts, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fur trade was really, really big in developing Ohio. And that's why a lot of people moved into the area. And Ohio was, you know, a lot of old-growth forest
right.
Before. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of that's been cultivated into agricultural land now. But, yeah, just an incredible animal, incredible predator. They're going to stay near bodies of water, rivers, streams, things like that. That's their main territory. They're going to really like to go after muskrat, which we're also seeing pretty active at the moment. They're building their slides, which is pretty amazing. We've got one in our pond that disturbs all of the geese that are brooding right now. So, but yeah, as far as other mammals in the area right now, we're going to see a lot of activity from squirrels. We have three types of squirrel in Ohio. We have gray squirrel, we have red squirrel, and then we have fox squirrel. Mm-hmm. Fox squirrel are going to be those bigger squirrels, the kind of the meatier squirrels, brown with a yellow, maybe tan belly. Red squirrels are red, and they have a white belly. They're a little bit smaller. And then we have gray squirrels. And now gray squirrels are really interesting. So your gray squirrel obviously has a little bit of gray coloration to it,
mm-hmm.
With a white belly most of the time. But I understand that a lot of people, or quite a few people, are seeing black squirrels in the area.
Yes, I was going to ask about those. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So the black coloration or the black squirrels that we're seeing, that's actually, it is a gray squirrel, same species. But it's a melanistic gray squirrel, and melanism is a mutation.
Right.
And now when we say mutation in genetics, you know, a mutation isn't always a negative thing. We tend to think of it as like this negative term, but mutation doesn't always mean negative. These black squirrels, though, they just develop too much melanin.
Okay.
And that gets deposited into their furs, and it makes them black squirrels. You can see this actually with amphibians as well. I'm thinking about American toads right now, just your average, you know, toad that you're seeing around. And toads are super resilient. I love toads. It just seems like whatever's happening, you can always find a toad.
Yes.
Wherever you are, you can always find a toad. if you start paying attention to the toads you find, you're going to see that some of them are really dark in coloration.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You're going to see that some of them are a little bit lighter in coloration. And then there's kind of a mid-range toad there as well. And that's just the melanin that's getting pumped into their skin, right, and darkening them up. And it could prove an advantage to things like a toad. You know, if something is, if a toad is, you know, spending a lot of its time underneath or in a dark forest, you know, where there's not a lot of sunlight getting through the canopy and hitting the ground, you know, it's not going to be great for that toad if it's big and bright. You know, it's going to want to be kind of a darker color.
Right.
Yeah, to avoid predation and just kind of camouflage a little bit better with its surroundings. So that melanism can really, really come in handy. On the opposite side, leucism is when you have a lack of pigment.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Well, it seems to me like I've seen more black squirrels in town than in the woods.
And I don't know if there's any correlation between, you know, the squirrels that live in town or inside of city limits in that melanism. I'm not sure if there's any correlation with anything there.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's interesting.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought. I saw more black ones in the town than in the country. Yes, squirrels, chipmunks. Chipmunks are pretty little things.
Yeah,
but they're noisy.
They're very noisy right now. Yeah, they are chattering back and forth. yeah, they're really, really funny, and just kind of alarmed by everything. Honestly, you know, I do a lot of bird watching. And I try and stay as still as possible, mm-hmm. you know, just to keep my profile pretty low while looking for birds. And, you know, it just doesn't matter. The chipmunks and blue jays, they both just alert everybody.
Yeah, blue jays are terrible about that. They're beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Blue jays are a really interesting bird as well. They are a COVID. Which means that they're in the crow and raven family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is really amazing. They're super smart, just like crows, just like ravens. Crows or blue jays are really, really intelligent birds. This is an anecdotal story, but there was a researcher that was looking after blue jays, and she was watching these adult blue jays that were on the ground foraging. So they were finding things to eat. And what they were doing is they would find something and they would bury it. They would come back for it later. Well, the juvenile blue jays that were in the area, they thought they were clever, mm-hmm. and they would hang out in the trees and they would watch the adult blue jays hop around and hide their food. Yeah, and then when they flew off, these juvenile blue jays would come down and they would pick the food out of the ground. and what she was finding was a lot of these juvenile blue jays, they were flying off kind of disappointed, and she wanted to figure out why. And so she was watching the adult blue jays a little bit closer and found out that instead of hiding their food, these adult blue jays, they were actually hiding little pebbles, little rocks, because they had figured out that the juveniles were coming down and stealing their
food. That's funny.
Yeah. Which is pretty incredible. Yeah. I just love blue jays, love birds altogether. But yeah, the blue jays, they can be really noisy. And alert everybody of your...
And they're very aggressive towards other birds from what I've seen.
They can be really aggressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they certainly can be. They actually have a call where they mimic a red-tailed hawk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if they do it well enough, then a lot of times that'll kind of get all the other little tinier birds to hush down for a moment. You know, they get some peace and quiet.
Well, we pretty well covered the animal world. Let's talk a little bit about the trees, the things that are growing.
Sure, yeah. We've got a lot of interesting plants coming up right now. Of course, you know, your trees are budding out in the moment. Not a lot of leaves on any branches right now, but soon to be. You know, trees depend on that photoperiodism in order to... kind of understand what they should be doing, right? So, you know, it's pretty amazing. Trees really judge how much sunlight they're getting every single day, you know, and when that sunlight shortens, we get less sunlight, you know, as right. we go closer to winter, they know it's time to shut down, basically go to sleep, take a rest for the colder months. Well, now they're seeing, not seeing, right? They're sensing in some way that there's more sunlight available during the day. So they're kind of waking up and send, you know, the way that trees kind of wake up and develop their leaves is really interesting. It's super complicated. Basically, you know, they hold inside of them a lot of carbon. Right, these little bubbles of carbon, along with some water, and when they start to sense more sunlight is available to mm-hmm. them, right, they start to pull minerals and pull water from the ground as the ground thaws, and then it triggers this system of sending that carbon to the buds, right, so the buds can start mm-hmm. developing, which is really, really incredible. Other plants that are coming up right now, we've got a lot of perennials coming up. Wild daffodils are out and blooming. They're those yellow, yellow, sometimes orangish flowers that have the trumpet in the middle.
Right.
Let's see. They're pretty amazing. We've got Bloodroot is coming up right now.
Mm-hmm. What about our state flower?
Our trilliums?
Yes.
Yeah, our white trilliums should be coming up here fairly soon if they're not up already. I haven't seen any yet, but that doesn't mean that they are not blooming. And then we've also got some, Dutchman's Breach, which is
yes.
beautiful flower right yeah. now. White flower. It's kind of in the shape of a heart. Really, really wonderful. Some of the non-natives we've got coming up right now, which people might be familiar with. We've got Lesser Periwinkle that's blooming. It'll pretty much bloom until fall. Let's see. We've got Siberian Squill, which is blooming. It's a flower. It's a smaller flower, about 4 to 6 inches tall. It's got a red-brown stem coming up.
Okay.
Lots of smaller flowers. They're violet or blue, the petals are. It's got a white center. Oddly enough, not native to Siberia. So, let's see. What else is coming up?
Any daffodils out there? Are daffodils native to our area, or did
wild
people
daffodil?
Bring them here?
Wild daffodil are native to the
okay.
area. Yeah.
I wasn't sure about that. I know they're usually found around where a house is or where a house was at one time.
Sure,
but
yeah.
I've not seen a lot of them in the woods.
We've got the woods over at Teradice. We've got a whole hillside just full of
okay.
them. Yeah, underneath some, I think it's box elder over there. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
This time of year, we're looking to... maybe a little bit later. Looking to go out mushroom hunting soon to
sure.
get the sponge mushroom. The
morels.
Morels,
yeah,
yes, that's
absolutely.
The word.
Yeah.
Yes, so it's pretty hard to mistake those.
Yes, yeah. There's a false morel, but as long as you study up on what you're looking for, you're not going to mistake, you know, the actual morel for that false morel. We're going to see, you know, a lot of other fungus kind of pop up here. We're also going to see the lichen on the trees, those kind mm-hmm. of green, yellow splotches on the trees. We're going to see them brighten up as they're able to do more of that photosynthesis, right?
Right.
And, yeah. As far as other fungus that you might be able to see right now, we might be able to see some turkey tail. Or that Versa tricolor coming up. We might be able to see some wood ear, which is a crazy looking fungus. Witch's butter might be coming around, jelly fungus. So,
what's that one that grows on trees? Looks like an elephant ear. You know what I'm talking about?
Ooh.
It kind of grows out like a shelf.
Ugh, there's a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, any of anything that you're seeing outside, there is likely a resource to figure out what it is. Actually, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, they develop pretty regularly identification books or field guides for you to take. You know, they have one that's specific for warblers, which we discussed earlier. They have one specific to trees, and I think there's something crazy like... I think they cover like 80 trees in their tree field guide, which is nice. They have waterfowl, they have common birds of Ohio, songbirds of Ohio, mammals, reptiles, spiders,
okay.
moths, butterflies.
And I understand the Teradice, that the house is available. If folks would want to spend a night or two there. We have less than a minute.
Yes. Okay,
who do we contact? How do we contact somebody there?
Yes. So due to the public health crisis at the moment, we are not offering that Airbnb space right now. We will in the future. The property is still open, though. We're doing a lot of work on the property, just trying to get out and around. We've got some railing projects that we'd like to do, some step projects that we'd like to do. We're cleaning up the flower beds. But you're more than welcome to come out to Teradice. And take a look around. We will be doing a lot of trail building in the future. We've got some speakers coming up later on in the year. Again, kind of tentative on what's going on with the COVID-19 virus. So just keep up to date with us. Visit us at our website.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP.